Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge with a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and I.
Morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and I am really excited. New York Times author Andrea Kane is here with her brand new novel that you can't put down once you start it because no stone unturned is absolutely fantastic. But before I begin, I want to send up prayers to everyone and pray to God that this horrible virus goes somewhere else to another planet far away. And I am doing something on Tuesday with psychotherapist Dennis Palumbo. We're going to talk about anxiety and depression and how it's affecting people in the everywhere, elderly, the young, how we can deal with children and help them on Tuesday at 10 o'clock, a special. This is strictly by psychotherapist Dennis Palumbo, and he agreed to do this, and I want to thank him deeply. And let's get started because this is going to be absolutely fantastic. Welcome, Andrea, and I'm so glad you came back on MJ Network.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be with you, and I echo your sentiments with prayers that this world will be a healthier and happier place very soon.
I hope so, too, because we need a lot of other, that they say, non-essential people, and I think people need to eventually get back to work, otherwise it's going to be even worse. So,
yes,
you have a new character on this book. Tell us about Fiona McKay. I love, first of all, if you look at my post, I did post my review on my phone just now, on Just Reviews, and I did put the link to the jewelry. I did look at it. Oh, my God. We're going to have to talk about that later. Tell us about Fiona McKay and what was she researching? She started off this novel.
She's very special to me, really. She's, you know, there's certain protagonists that come on the scene that you love and then certain that you uber love. I just love Fiona. Mm-hmm. And she was one of the starting forces of the book, where a lot of times the idea comes, or, you know, a mm-hmm. muddied version of what's happening. This was Fiona. She just popped in there. She's, for those of you who know the Forensic Instincts team, Ryan McKay is their techno genius, and Fiona is his baby sister, which brings all kinds of stuff to the forefront, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. But Fiona is also a goldsmith and a jewelry designer and maker. And she was, as the book opened, in the process of doing research for her new jewelry line, and was researching it because she has a series of tapestries that are passed down through her family. It's called the memory box. It's passed down from female to female, starting from her great-grandmother. And what she's found in there from her great-grandmother is a series of 12, well, actually 13. It's 12 smaller tapestry panels and one large one. And they're so intriguing to her that she is looking into the symbols, the actual mm-hmm. pictures themselves, everything she can. So she's doing research to design jewelry from this.
And that was exciting. You know, it was funny, when my sister died, it's going to be 10 years out of nowhere, one of the authors made me a memory box for her so that I could put stuff in it. And
it's a wonderful thing.
It's beautiful with her picture on the outside and everything. So she can remind me, you know, when I do something wrong, give me that look, that Marsha look. She does, between her and my mother and the Ruthie look. So why did you focus and she focus on Celtic-inspired jewelry? What was the inspiration for that? Well, that's interesting because I learned a lot reading this.
Well, you know, the whole Celtic theme was hers, first of all, not mine. But I happen to love Celtic jewelry as well, but that was not really it. It was her. It's, first of all, the heavily Irish heritage that plays into this. Now, you know, Celtic is beyond. I mean, Gaelic is technically the Irish, but Celtic includes Ireland heavily. So the history, the symbols, I think, were the most fascinating thing. They're the legends behind all of it, because Ireland has so many legends, and Celtic history and jewelry is so heavily steeped in those that she was, her artist's call was just that she's so intrigued by that and researching the symbols, you know, and on these particular tapestries, there is one unusual symbol that's on all the tapestries. So she's just completely intrigued, and she's also determined to put a modern twist on some very ancient type things. So that's the intrigue in her mind of wanting to do this and pursuing it for her new line.
Yeah, I know, that's exciting. So the tapestries were at the crib, but why the what about this large panel? So I ask any questions, I pretty much quest out everything, but if I ask anything that you can just say skip it. Don't worry, no problem.
No, don't worry. You're always very respectful of that, and I appreciate it. The center panel, which is the largest one, I think is the most intriguing because of the fact that there's so much on it. There are things she doesn't recognize. There are things that she doesn't actually see at all. But she definitely sees the symbol, and she definitely sees some of the more exquisite and obvious facts that there's, she feels there's definitely something here that needs to be analyzed, that there's history here that she wants to understand. So she turns to Rose, who's, you know, with her for a short time, but she's a very special character. She's an antiquities specialist. She has more historical knowledge and extensive contacts on all things Celtic than pretty much anybody. And she's also the person who first bought Fiona's very first piece when she was in her teens, so she's special to Fiona, and she's doing research for Fiona on that center panel, and has actually, obviously, from the very beginning of the book, uncovered something of great import and never has the chance to tell that to Fiona.
I know, that is the sad part. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know, my 5 stars are on. Amazon just posted it and said it's there for this book.
Thank you.
Well, I'm amazed, because usually it takes them 3 or 4 days to remind themselves that I'm great. It took them 5 minutes, which is really good.
That,
so
that
obviously, I must have written this exactly the way they wanted it, because they didn't complain, which is rare.
Do.
But yeah, I know. I just ignore it. So Rose, Fiona goes to meet Rose, and she's traumatic. Something traumatic happens. That was really, I liked Rose. Poor, she didn't have a chance to stay up a little longer, but. How come you decided to do that?
It was essential because Rose possessed information that couldn't be revealed at that time. And so what happened was she walked into the scene of Rose unfortunately being dead, and she freaks out as any layperson would. And the first thing she thinks of, because, you know, the detectives come in, the crime scene, she's just really flipped out. I think that people forget how flipped out the actual layperson would be under those circumstances. It's not like somebody who's in law enforcement. It's, you know, not that they're happy, but Rose was a dear friend of hers. She's a person and not a specialist in any kind of forensics or any kind of, certainly, homicide. So she pretty much goes to pieces, and it isn't until the lead detective says to her, you know, where should we take you? Where do you want to go? And she knows she doesn't want to go back to her own place alone. So she asks to be taken to her brother's, who does have special talents for Constance, which is where they take her.
To Ryan and my favorite people. I wish they really existed.
I do. To me, they really do. I think that makes me kind of scary, and I probably should be locked up somewhere like Monk or something, because I believe these people are real. I really do. To me, they are.
I often wonder sometimes, I know, that about that, because sometimes you feel like you really, Monk is my favorite, by the way.
Yeah, I love him.
I love Monk. I love Tony Shalhoub, but I really love Monk. And, you
I
know,
love
for
both.
Those of you that
agree.
And for those of you that have been washing your hands 1,000 times, well, Monk would appreciate it, because I have the cleanest ones in America, I think. It's scary. So what happens when she's in the doorstop, and how does Ryan react? And then, of course, he has Claire. And does she mind having the sister there, too? Because sometimes they do. And sometimes
okay,
they don't.
Okay, but what's very funny is this scene is the first thing that came in this book. I could see it playing out in my head like a movie. I just knew that this – I couldn't wait to write the scene. And usually I'm agonizing when I'm writing, but this one just – I couldn't wait because I knew exactly what was going to happen because I know all these people so well. So here comes Fiona, terrified, freaked out, ready to go to her big brother who has all this expertise and for help. And in the meantime, on the other side of the little green forest, or on the other side of the door, Ryan and Claire have just finished a heated encounter in bed. And he's ready for more, and she gets those feelings that she gets because Claire is a claircognizant, which is somebody who intuitively senses things that other people don't. And she just has this feeling that this is not the time, and that she was going to the door. And so she gets dressed, goes to the door, and at the exact second that Fiona's about to knock, Claire opens the door, and the two of them come face to face. Now, Ryan, who is one of the most private people in the world, has done the unthinkable when it comes to women. He has not mentioned his sister to his girlfriend, and he has not mentioned that he has a girlfriend to his sister. So neither of them knows that the other one exists. So Claire is uncharacteristically jealous. That's just not her nature. But here's this beautiful woman standing on, you know, who's just a couple of years younger than her, standing on the doorstep, obviously ready to see Ryan in a way that indicates she knows him well. Well, what would you assume? You know, the assumption is here comes either an ongoing or a previous girlfriend, and she's kind of pissed because they have evolved after, these books of becoming pretty exclusive, even though they never say the words girlfriend and boyfriend. They become exclusive, and the understanding implicitly is that they don't see other people. So she's – and Fiona is totally – she's not so much confused that there's a girl in Ryan's house because Ryan has had many, many women, but she doesn't need this right now. She just wants to see her brother, and she wants to push past this extraneous human being and get in to see Ryan and burst into tears and tell her what's happened. So it kind of all comes together at one time because Claire is getting all kinds of flashes in her head that are conflicting about whether or not, you know, who Fiona is and why she's here. And Fiona just wants to see Ryan, is demanding to come in. And then Ryan finally comes kind of strolling out in his sweats, figuring out there's some kind of commotion going on. And he's pissed. He's like, you know, what are you doing here, Fia? You know, it's where our agreement is that you don't just come over without calling. And in the meantime, he's aware that Claire has no idea who she is, so he knows she's going to be really angry. So it comes together in kind of an interesting, fun way because Claire makes the connection all of a sudden. I mean, it number one, it clicks in her head because she just feels it. And number two, then she's looking at the two of them together. They look so much alike. And Ryan is, again, it's just uncharacteristic for Ryan, feels he needs to make an explanation. So he sort of says, you know, I this is my, and Claire kind of fills in, sister. So it's a tender moment, and it's a funny moment, and you get to see all of them in their true personalities and some softness that you don't get to see. So I just love that. I really enjoyed writing that.
Well, those things really do happen, by the way.
They really do, yes.
Oh, trust me, I know. My brother had a girlfriend when he was younger. I was younger yesterday too. She actually said to him, "Your sister doesn't like me," and she was very mean. And he dumped her. I didn't say a word. He said, "Because my sister's never mean to anybody, and she's always been nice to you." Fortunately, he married somebody that's wonderful. But then he had to get my approval
loyal.
Too.
That was very loyal of him.
Yeah. My mother was very proud of me because I told on her, and my mother was very proud of me because she was dying to get rid of this one anyway. I said, "Leave it to me. I'll take care of everything."
Oh, you were a good
team.
It worked well.
Yep. So, forensic instincts. Why did they agree to take the case? And why were her parents involved and with this tapestry? That was interesting, though.
Well, as far as forensic instincts, Ryan is one of them, and they are a very tight family. They, you know, they have a very unique familial relationships besides their obvious working relationship. And Ryan called immediately to say that he needed to go with Fiona to go tell their parents. I'll get their parents in 2 seconds. And so Casey told the team what he said they could tell the team, what she could tell the team, which was exactly what had happened, and that, you know, that he had a sister, Fiona, and that she had come upon the body, and that they were going to, just, you know, to handle her and handle her parents, and Claire was coming because she was going to be the support system, because that's what Claire does best. So at that point, it, even though it wasn't official until later on in the book, not much later on, but it was always going to be Forensic Instinct's case, because when it comes to one of theirs, they will protect and defend that. Fiona, by extension, is one of theirs. And as far as their parents, they're very, you know, typical in their traditional love for their children. They feel very emotionally bonded. And, of course, remember, Fiona's the baby. She has three older brothers. Ryan is the youngest of the older brothers. But she has brothers, and then there's baby Fiona, who's really not that much of a baby, but to them. And so what happens is they go they don't actually tell their parents all of it. They don't say anything about homicide. They just say that Rose was killed and that Fiona discovered her body. They know Rose as well because they all belong to the same church. So, and her parents are very, very devoted to the church, which is Old St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is a whole other story because that's the most wonderful place in the world. I mean, I spent so much time there researching this book. At any rate, they're all part of the same tapestry, so to speak. So they spend a lot of time with her parents explaining, and her mother's comforting Fiona. And it's a very warm and family-oriented feeling, but it also is a revealing moment because while Ryan is talking to his father and telling him more of the specific aspects of things, Fiona goes upstairs to the attic with her mother and Claire and shows Claire the tapestries. And Claire, of course, is dying to get her hands on them because she wants to touch them and see what she can pick up from them. But that would be extremely disrespectful. So she just looks at them and is just amazed by their beauty. So it's sort of a combination of an emotional scene, and which was very important to me to have that familial tie depicted right away, but at the same time it was a suspense plot thing where they needed to find out right away as well so that Claire could start the connection that FI needed to make.
I know, but we have another voice there. I'm not going to tell people whether I like this person or not. We have Neil Dempsey. Who is he, and how does he manage to attend the memorial for Rose, and why did he come?
Okay, well, we'll start from the beginning with Niall as far as him. Yes, we do find out pretty quickly, so that we won't keep this too big a secret. He was a member of the IRA. He was a sniper. He was pretty frightening. He was a one-shot deal, if you want to look at it that way. And he, at the height of his career, was under threat of being made extinct. So he escaped Ireland and came over during the Troubles, which is the 80s, to America, where he reinvented himself. He was not Niall Dempsey at that time, but he is now Niall Dempsey, with complete with everything, to be a, you know, birth certificate, passport, everything. He's a human. He's become a very multimillionaire real estate developer. So he's an affluent man unto himself, but he's also one of Rose's main customers. He comes frequently. He's very interested in all the same things. And he also is a member of the same church. So they're connected in all those ways. And besides all of that, he has a great interest in the research that Rose is doing, and therefore would love to know about it. And she, you know, she talks a little bit, but not very much, because she keeps things close to the vest. After all, she has a client. There's some privilege involved. But Niall is very interested from the beginning, and we know that. We don't know why, but we know that.
We're not going to tell them why. It's none of their business. They have to read the book. and you know, the bad part about the coronavirus, this is really serious, is that there are a lot of people that want. I have about 30 books that I've read in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Can you tell that I have a lot of things to do? And I can't give them away. So you
I know, that's
hard.
So
I can't give them away because I'm afraid that someone's going to get, they're not going to get sick, but I wouldn't do that anyway. So, and I want, my cousin asked me to mail some to Florida. I said, I won't do that either because I'm afraid. I said, you're going to have to go on Amazon or load it down on Kindle because that's just the way it is. So there's another character, and I really felt bad because he had to get X'd out because he's really not part of the team, but he is, and that's Hutch. Why can't he become part of the investigation? Because Casey wasn't very happy. Poor thing.
Well, Hutch is very special also to me because he's been there since the onset of the series.
I love him.
And he is Casey's significant other, and that's getting more and more intense as time is going on.
That's good.
But the problem being that Hutch works for the FBI, and he is very by the rules. And that most of, I mean, I've dealt with the FBI, obviously, for numerous books, and they are very, very, you know, they're dedicated to keeping classified, and certainly not crossing any lines into the even remotely illegal. And Forensic Instincts is not that. Forensic Instincts crosses the lines as need be because the end justifies the means, and they want to protect their client and get to the bottom of things at all costs. So they don't do anything flagrant, but they certainly, I always say it's kind of like walking up, the difference between waiting for legal means to go into a house and standing outside the house and going, did you just hear someone cry out from inside? I think so. Let's go in and see. So it's that difference, and that's a fine line. So Hutch and Casey, who have practically been together all the time, and who, and yes, I will tell this much, that they're going to make the decision in this book that they're going to move in together. So it's a huge step for them. They're not going to move in together at Forensic Instincts. They're going to get their own place because Casey needs her own space and her own time that he can't be privy to because – number one, and first and foremost, honestly, I really believe that not just Casey, but the whole team doesn't want to put Hutch in that position because they all care about him. And remember, Mark introduced him, I think, the two of them. So they all know each other very well. But the other thing is that Hutch doesn't want to be put in that position because he can't stay silent if he knows something that he needs to bring to the Bureau. And he just as soon not know. He knows very well what they do, but he doesn't know the details and he doesn't want to know the details. So in this particular investigation where everything is sort of on a need-to-know basis and most of it is kind of sketchy, they purposely, and Casey especially, just speaks in grand sweeping ways to Hutch, but not specifics because she knows that he would have to do something about it and she can't let him and she doesn't want to put him in a position to have to. That changes later in the book, but that's when it becomes the legitimate investigation.
Okay, Cheryl was listening from Partners in Crime.
Yes.
So I have a question from her, because I don't want to forget to ask, because she takes care of me, too, by making sure that I'm never without 1,000 books to read. Andrea says hi. She's listening, by the way. She says, I'm a huge fan of the FI, Forensic Intrigue series. No pressure. When is the next book coming out? And will there be another Zermatt Group book? That's her question before we continue. It's very important.
Okay, no pressure, right? Yeah, you know, it's always fun.
Yeah.
I finish a book, and usually the day that it comes out, and I'm already agonizing, because it takes me a year to write a book and research it and everything. So I'm busy. And then the minute the book comes out, I usually get like 10 emails from my readers. When is the next one coming out? And I want to cry.
Yeah.
Because I would love to produce them quickly. I really would. I would love to be one of those authors that can put books out every 3 months, but I just can't.
Well, there are a few.
I can't write a non-complex book. There's so much to all of them that, and unfortunately, in creating this new one that I've just started, it's a really miserable environment to feel creative in. So it's coming only in dribs and drabs. But I guess the answer is it's usually a year. This one probably will be longer because I'm having trouble getting really heavily into it when my brain is taken by reality, unfortunately. As far as Zermatt, I love them. And Aiden is in this book in little dribs and drabs, too. So Aiden was always in the books in dribs and drabs, even before I actually brought Zermatt to life. I say we because I think of Zermatt as a living entity also. But I know that they'll be back in a full force to be able to interweave their lives with Forensic Instincts, maybe in a more all-over global way as opposed to just members of the FIT sprinkling in. I don't know. I never know because they tell me. But the long-winded answer to poor Cheryl, who's probably thinking, would you just shut up and give me an answer, is yes, they'll be back, just I don't know when.
Well, I wish that they would come up with an answer to get rid of this virus. Maybe they can come up with one and tell you what to do. You just never know.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Maybe Claire can figure it out. So, how did you create the panel bands with their special voices, and who's Peter, and why is he close to Tempsey? I didn't like him. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I didn't like a lot of people in this book.
Yeah, I didn't like him at all. Sorry, people.
And the other thing is that creating some of it was horrific for me because I'm not really good with the visceral stuff. I mean, most of my violence in my books takes place off screen because I can't write the really bloody, gory stuff. That's why I stayed away from some, you know, I think that people read enough about Niall's history to understand what he did without watching him do it. I don't think it's necessary for me. Again, I'm certainly not criticizing any other author who chooses to go a different route because God bless them if they, but I mean, I still can't watch Bambi because the mother dies, so I'm pathetic. We can't talk about me and my ability to handle that. But each panel represents something different, and everything, they're represented in architectural ways, in landscape ways. They all have that same unknown symbol in the upper right-hand corner, so nobody quite knows everything. But it was very interesting because I had to determine where and when each one took place because, remember, this is her great-grandmother's perspective, so things that are known to us today weren't known to her then. So it was complicated, but that's where the rich history of things in Ireland come in because there's so much that still stands, so much that's still talked about, so many legends that are still passed on, that part was creatively wonderful and fun to do. And as far as Peter, is that who we're getting to?
Yeah, he's next victim.
Okay, well, Peter is he was Niall's best friend when they were together in North Ireland, and they met when they were teenagers, and they pretty much grew up together. They were, you know, they stole beer and drank it together in trucks, you know, and talked about life, and they did all kinds of the usual stealing cigarettes and the stuff that they did in those days. Again, we're going back to, you know, the 1980s is when Niall left, so we're talking about the 70s here. So, you know, we're talking a long time ago. But Peter is the first to get involved with the IRA through his father, and he's the one who actually draws Niall in to become part of the same. Again, he wasn't Niall then, but he is Niall now, so I just refer to him that way for ease. At any rate, they stay together until Niall flees, and when Peter comes over to New York later on, he finds a magazine. It's like an architectural digest kind of thing, and he finds the photos and the write-up of Niall as he is today and who he is today, and he of course looks him up. He was his best mate, so he looks him up right away, and they re-establish their friendship, but unfortunately Peter is very down and out, so it's a lot of Niall giving to him and helping him out, giving him jobs, etc. Because
Claire
Peter's
is clever.
You know,
so how does she get him to think that she won an apartment in one of his buildings? That was kind of smart.
Who, Casey? Is that what we're talking about, Casey and the and
yeah.
Hutch?
How does Claire lure Dempsey in? How does she make him believe that she wants an apartment in one of his buildings?
Okay, what happens is that Casey, what she does is that at this point, it's a known factor. That's why I just said it, and you know, nothing that the reader can't know, is that Casey and Hutch are going to be moving in together. And they want to find out more about Niall Dempsey because Claire has these really, really dark feelings about him, and she senses that there's a lot of evil there, but she can't attribute the evil to specifically what happened in the, you know, to Rose or to his past, or she just can't get a handle on it. So Casey decides it's time to learn more about him, and what she does is she basically asks to come to his office, and to sit down and to talk about his buildings, because she and her boyfriend are moving in together, and she'd like to hear his, maybe his opinions, and also to maybe tell her about some of his buildings, because he has apartments that are luxuries and she would love to live in one of those ostensibly, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, he upsets her plans a little bit, because he would like to get into Forensic Instincts to see, he wants to know if they have the tapestries. He wants to know what they know. He wants to know a lot of things. So instead of having Casey come to him, he sort of jumps the gun and says, I'm in the neighborhood, I'll come to you. So that's not exactly what she had in mind, but she weathers it pretty well. I mean, she does what she needs to do and finds out an awful lot in that interaction where he comes there. And that's what Casey does best, because she's a behaviorist. And she accomplishes what she wants to far more than he accomplishes what he wants to. Let's just say that.
I know, that's really, these tapestries are at the heart of everything. So how does he become involved? Because that's when it got really exciting, people.
Who, Hutch, you mean?
Yeah.
Hutch becomes involved at the point where they feel that it's legitimate to give him information to find out what he needs to find out. So they have Aiden involved at that point, and they work together so that it becomes a legitimate FBI case, which is the only way that Hutch can. I mean, Hutch has bits and pieces of, he obviously has put together a lot more than he's been told. But when he's told a way, which Mark tells him, a way that he can become involved in a legitimate way, he is more than happy to, because he's frightened for Casey on a personal level, and he clearly wants to bring down somebody as evil as Nile, you know. So he wants to become involved, and when he's given the opportunity to become involved legitimately, he grabs it.
Well, I don't blame him. Makes her feel better, too.
Yes.
Why are the detectives down on Fiona? And why do they resent her? I mean, how could they resent Fiona?
At the beginning, they feel really sorry for her, and they feel that she's a victim, as she was, by coming in on the scene. And then they find out who her brother is. And everything changes, because they know Ryan McKay, and Ryan McKay knows them. And Ryan is the most eager member of Forensic Instincts to get around the law, to do battle with the law. And he's, because Ryan is Ryan, and he has a mega ego. And he usually not only thinks he can do it better, but he usually can do it better.
Yeah, he does. I like him on my side.
Me too. And the thing is that he is on the client side, especially here. It's his sister. So he's all out and doing it whatever way necessary and whatever means are necessary, hacking, doing whatever needs to be done. Ryan's there to do it. So the fact is that there are so many instances in the past that FI has really done the work, and they don't want the credit, but they get it anyway because the media is so fascinated with them. So the police are not too happy with them, and the FBI is not too thrilled with them either. So in general, law enforcement resents their tactics and resents what they get out of this, when really and truly it's them that do some of the legwork. And FI keeps trying to give them credit, but the media doesn't want it that way, because it's much more like, it's kind of like if you have a choice between researching a local business or researching the royal couple, which would you do? You know, the media's answer is let's go for the royal couple. So that's what the media sees here. They see a really exciting team to research and to look into and to hound. And law enforcement just gives them facts, and that doesn't make them happy. So FI has become very famous in their own right. So the long-winded answer to that is they resent Fiona because Ryan is her brother and because he's and his team are now protecting her. And when they, of course, assume, and they're right, that things are being kept from them. So.
That does happen to people in real life, too. So, tell us about Fiona's parents and why Ryan and his father didn't get along. They seemed like there was a lot of tension right there. Didn't really want to be in the same room together.
It's very hard. I told you a lot about the relationship that Fiona has. Fiona's very, very close with her parents. Ryan is not by nature a touchy-feely kind of person.
Yeah.
So he has a really, he's a loving son, but The problem with his father is that his father is all about academics. He's a teacher in, you know, what I would equivalent to like the Bronx School of Science. You know, it's that kind of a thing. He's a very highly academic man, and therefore he believes that his children should follow suit. And his two brothers, Ryan's two brothers, are both attorneys. And Ryan was going to MIT. And after a couple of years, he dropped out because he was too bright for academics and too of a cowboy, too much of a cowboy to stay in academics. So it was time for him to go do his own thing, which he's done really successfully. But his father was so disappointed in him and felt that he had left a really promising future and had not utilized his mind to the degree that he should have. So with all of that, there's Ryan's resentment, there's his father's disappointment, and it's festered because they've never really talked, being that neither of them is a communicator that way, probably to a certain extent because they're both men. But they don't ever really talk it out. And so all these years have passed by, and there's still that tension. And, of course, Claire is hell-bent on bringing that out and having the two of them talk. That's one of her goals from when she meets them and sees what's going on and feels the tension. And I think that to a certain extent she accomplishes her goal, but it's kind of very sad because they want the same things but for different reasons, and it's very hard for his father to accept who he is. Ryan's a maverick, and his father is another straight and narrow kind of guy and a brilliant man. And aside from sharing their Guinness together, they can't seem to get it together to be in the same room to talk about anything except now when it's Fiona's life.
That's scary. Well, my mom was very insistent that I become an educator when I was 3. And she had it jumped into my head, and I had no choice. So sometimes, yeah, I understand how Ryan feels like, you know, you want to make your own choices in life. Fortunately for me, I made the right one, and I listened to her. Sometimes you have to go on your own, so we're not going to tell you anybody whether they straightened it out or not, but it is hard to deal with it when one parent is disappointed in you. You don't want that.
It is. It is. And even Ryan, with all of his secure nature, still it hurts when your father doesn't approve of you.
That it hurts a lot. So who is Aiden, and why would he help in the investigation? And the exciting part was, how did you create all that technology? I said, like, I wish I had all the access to do all those things, especially with phones and spyware and all that. That was really cool.
Well, as far as Aiden is not only marked. In fact, I don't. Just in case anyone is new to FI, I know I started talking about Mark, but Mark is part of Forensic Instincts. He's pretty much Casey's right hand. He was a former Navy SEAL. He was a former FBI agent who was in the Behavioral Analysis Unit. That's actually where he met Hutch. And so he's pretty much everything. He's one of those you want that guy in your corner. He can do just about anything, and he is everything to Casey because from the beginning he's one of her original team members, and so he's there for her, and he balances her in many ways, and she runs things by him, and they're a very good one-on-one partnership as well within the group. It's kind of like a circle within a circle. As far as Aiden, he is Mark's brother, and the two of them both were in the military, but Aiden was a former Marine. Who is now working for a high-powered company. It's called Heckman Flex. It's like Goldman Sachs. So it's not a surprise that they sound the same. But he really is doing this for the money that he needs to make, because he needs to provide for his little 4-year-old girl, Abby, because to make a long story short, as far as Abby, who I adore. I love writing her, but then I love little kids. And she's such a precocious, wonderful little kid. Aiden and Abby's mother were involved in a very torrid short-term relationship, and he had no idea she was even pregnant when they split up. And she was killed, unfortunately, and social services kind of showed up on his doorstep and said, here. And this is a man who's been on his own, totally autonomous forever, and has absolutely no idea what to do. So he is sort of completely taken aback and doesn't know how to handle it and has now become an unbelievable father. He's a very hardened man, and Abby is his weak link, and she can wrap him around her little finger, and she does. And she does with her Uncle Mark as well. She really pretty much has all the adults in her corner. And so Aiden is wonderful to write because he is a very strong, autonomous man, but you get to see the softer side of him through Abby. Mm-hmm. And he's also the one who formed and is the president of the Zermatt group that Cheryl asked about. And they are an entity too. They're a separate investigative team, but they're much more, it's a more covert team and a much more internationally based team where they handle big ecumenical stuff that surpasses, I guess I would have to say that Forensic Instincts is more domestic and they're more international, but in Dead in a Week, which is the book that comes right before No Stone Unturned, you'll get to see them in mm-hmm. action because they're an unbelievable team as well. And they do have some of the Forensic Instincts team members with them, Mark being one of them. So he can help, Aiden can help in so many different ways, but what they do is they go to him because they want a DNA analysis, and they don't. They can't go to the FBI crime lab because obviously they can't do it, and they need somebody who has the ability to get a turnaround of a nanosecond, and Aiden has that. Aiden's connections are all in a nanosecond. It's kind of nanosecond Aiden. Anything you need, he can get done because he has contacts in every area of the world, in every type of business, in every type of legal investigation aspect. He can do it, and it gets done. So he does help them. Mark goes to him. He tells him what he can. And Aiden realizes they have big fish to fry, and he goes right in and helps them and gives them a great jump start on what they need because they need DNA analysis and fast. And he gets it to them. So
not like everything today. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I wonder if there's an organization
today
that does that, that can actually do that.
I'm sure there's an organization that can do everything. I'm quite sure there's organizations that exist that we don't even fathom in the slightest amount. As far as the technology, that's fun on the one hand, and it's so challenging for me because I am not a technology person. I mean, I am fine when it comes to your basics. I mean, I'm not by any means an idiot, but as far as the stuff that's in here, you know, that Ryan can do, that, you know, and and then the Zermatt group, when I got that far, it was beyond anything I could even imagine. So I took the realities of the research that I could do. I mixed it with some of the FBI knowledge that was passed on to me, none of the classified stuff, obviously. And then I went to the quintessential source, my husband, because he's a techno genius. So he spent a lot of time with me. So he helped me build it, and then, of course, he took it to the next level, which is the wonderful part about fiction. You do have some creative license. So most of it is based in reality in terms of what can be done, and some of it that I think is pushing the boundaries probably is being done. So it's really fascinating to see everybody at work helping me in terms of making this happen so that I do understand it. I love watching Ryan implement it because it's, you know, I love, you know, going as far back as the earlier books, we get to see some of his little creations, you know, like Gecko, his little machine that crawls up walls and investigates with cameras and he creates a world of technology that is beyond just what he does online, but what he can do. And I really love writing it because I love seeing it, but I don't like doing the actual stuff because I don't understand it. And my poor husband explains it to me like a spoon-fed infant, because I'm learning so much that it's so beyond my realm of comfort. My comfort zone is taxed very badly. But once it's done and I read it and I think, that's so cool. Because afterwards, sometimes you read back and you go, who wrote that? I couldn't have done that. So that's the investigation. I'm sorry, that's the technology part of the book, all of them, some of them more than others.
Okay, before I forget, Tuesday, like I said at the beginning of the show, psychotherapist Dennis Palumbo and Fran are going to talk about anxiety, depression and stress related to the coronavirus. Maybe by then we'll have a miracle and we'll be gone. On the 16th, Devin McFadden is going to be here. The title of the book is What Death Taught Terrence. Terrence is a character that has cerebral palsy and he's dead. And he tells about his life and what he went through and acceptance, forgiveness. The author has cerebral palsy and asked to do this interview. And I'm really excited that he agreed to do it.
Wow.
He's going to talk about his real life. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. On the 20th, I'm not sure how many of the authors or one of the authors of the Montague Murders is going to finally be there. On the 22nd, I'm doing something outrageous characters. It's just one of my crazy schemes. Vincent Zandri, Charles Salzberg, and Tom Walsh. We're going to talk about outrageous characters. And if you read the Per Diem Novus, you're going to wonder how he wrote about this virus and how he sent this group of people back into time to prevent it from happening in the present. It's scary. On the 26th, somebody we all know and love, John Land, Murder of 12, takes off on the Agatha Christie, and then there was none. And on the 28th, Gabriel Valjean, Dirty Old Town. That's just April. I'm not even going to go in to tell you what I'm up to in May. So we've got about 10 minutes.
I'm breathless at this end, but I've lost my breath.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can't believe it. I'll tell you something. In the last 2 weeks, I have gotten 20, maybe even more, publicists that have asked me to review books. The scary part is that the books are not getting here so fast. If they order it on Amazon, it gets here. If you order it for the publishing company, sometimes they don't get it. I don't know. It's like the mail is like not delivering every And I know what's going to happen. It's going to be outside my door, and I'm going to like, oh my God. I don't take the books inside. I take a pair of gloves and I put the books in the bag, or I stick them in the trunk of the car for 3 days until the cardboard is clear. That's what I was told to do, so that's what I do.
Very smart.
So, I know it's just crazy, but I know. So, before I get to the good stuff, which is jewelry, which is my favorite thing in the world, where do you see the team next? Are you bringing Fiona back, I hope?
Fiona has to come back. I'm not quite sure how she's coming back yet, but I just can't let her go because she's so, even if she's just there in a minimal capacity, she will be there because she's such a significant. Actually, I feel like sometimes with the clients that are really special that they have, I feel like they're members of the team when the book is over. And with Fiona, I feel like she's sort of an adjunct member of the team. Where do I
Maybe she'll
next?
Create
okay.
something. Maybe she'll create a piece
definitely.
Of jewelry.
Well, that's what she probably will do since she's doing it now in real life. But we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
As far as where I see them next, I started an idea that is something that it's one of those things that it's one of those rip from the headlines things that stuck in my head, and I'm working from that. But I'm having a lot of trouble because of my concentration. But I do see that this one's going to have a serial killer, which I haven't done in a while, and it's hard for me all the time. But they're so interesting to analyze and to research, and I love working with the FBI about that because they're so amazing when they teach me things. So, because I do talk to the behavioral analysis unit, and they teach me the real stuff, not the stuff you see on TV. So it's really fascinating. It is consulting with them and bringing someone like that in. So that I can tell you that it will be the forensic instincts team. Yes, you'll see Fiona at some point, and there will be a serial killer. That's as far as I can tell you at this point. I don't know a whole lot more.
It's lucky that you get people to help you because it's really hard to get somebody from the
hard.
Outside. And now it's even harder. I know. So I was lucky to get Dennis to do this for me on Tuesday. It's really hard,
I was just going to say that at this point it's very hard, and I don't even trouble some of them because they're so upfront with this, with the coronavirus. They have so much they need to do that I feel really insignificant in comparison. I mean, I realize that what I do brings people solace and time away and happiness, but that's still not the same thing as going out and researching, trying to find cures for things, trying to keep people from getting sicker, and keeping them healthy. I mean, that's the number one thing in life right now.
Well, to me, this virus is a serial killer. That's
my opinion.
It is.
You're absolutely right.
That's how I feel.
Well put.
I mean, so we have Claire and Ryan, And they work very well together. We're going to see what's going to happen with them. We're not going to say.
Sure.
But
absolutely.
I did look at the jewelry. Now, as as an educator, I mean, this was funny. One of the children in my reading group said, do you wear fake or do you wear real? And I just looked at her and said, did you really ask me that question? I said, let's go into jewelry 101, when you can wear fake and when you can wear real and how you deal the difference. I actually did research and showed, taught them how to tell the fake and real. It was hilarious, but it was a very good lesson because I was able to do some stories with them. I never read anything that was normal and were boring. I was never boring. But tell us about the jewelry Fiona created and where can we learn more about it? And it's pricey, I know that, but it's beautiful.
Fiona's come to life in a true sense because she has her own website now, FionaMcKayJewelry.com, and she's there, and the story about her life is there, and pretty much everything that you could want to read about her is there. And then there's the jewelry, which is what we started with, and I'll tell you who we are in 1 second, but what we started with was the actual pieces in the book, or at least a portion of them. There will be more, so that everybody has the chance to get that wonderful feeling of seeing the jewelry that is actually still in this book come to life and be able to wear it themselves. They're unique and they're beautiful. And since I'm not the one who designed them, I can say that they are absolutely exquisite. And I would wear every single piece. And they are, you know, as far as real life goes, they're within most people's price range for good jewelry. I mean, as you just said, you wear real or not real. Nobody, let's put it this way, they're not engagement rings, but they're beautiful and they're well. I'm so excited about this because the real Fiona McKay is Fiona McKay, but the presence behind her that did all of this is not only me. Obviously, I do all the writing of it, but Nancy Trosky is the goldsmith that I consulted with at the beginning that we began working together from the start on doing Fiona's pieces. And then we just had a phenomenal collaborative relationship. We worked together constantly. We're still working together. And she has designed those pieces herself, made right here in the USA, which is very important to us. That's significant. Nancy was very talented, and she has her own designs. But these are ones that she brings to Fiona that we work together to bring to you. And the website is a beautiful website to begin with. But you can see Fiona, you can see everything about her, and you can read a little bit about the book, my book, and about Nancy and her designs and how she creates jewelry. So hopefully, right now I know that everybody is kind of down and not exactly in the mood to show off their gorgeous jewelry to nobody because they were sitting in the house by themselves. But someday, when everybody's feeling more flagrantly happy again, I'm hoping that Fiona's jewelry will bring them joy and that they'll be able to wear it and feel like they're wearing a piece of her and a piece of the book and feel good about themselves too because they're so beautiful.
I'm looking at them right now, by the way.
I know, but this is like it's like my baby, so I'm so excited.
Well, I'm looking at the Casey Tree of Life Ring of Crystals. Oh, is this gorgeous? And then I was looking at another one. I'm terrible. When it comes to jewelry, I'm like hooked. I got to not do this because by the time I finish, I'll have five of them on my hand. I could see it.
Well, we even did Hero's Dog Tag because we thought that was so cool, Hero's Dog Tag. I love it. It's all Celtically designed. So it's fascinating to see the Celtic beauty and because her whole thing is doing
is
Celtic
pretty.
Jewelry with a modern twist. So it does have a modern flair to it.
The brand bracelet is gorgeous, too, on the front. Oh, my God. Okay, so where can we learn more about you and your work before I get carried away with jewelry? I can't wear anything that's fake because my hand turns green. And unfortunately, I can't wear real silver, but I can wear white gold and gold and sterling silver. And that says about all. What can I say?
Yes.
But the stuff is gorgeous. So where can we find out more about you and your work?
Everything related to me, it's easiest just go right to my website, which is AndreaKane.com. You can be connected to every social networking channel from there. You can be connected to how to buy my books, to read excerpts from my books. obviously this book, but all the others that preceded it. Mm. So that would be the place that I would, instead of listing 17 different sites, you know, I just go to AndreaKane.com and you can see everything about me, and then go to FionaBKJewelry.com and you can see everything about Fiona.
Well, if you ever decide that the person that's designing the jewelry and you want to do a show about jewelry, I'm so in. I think people
she would love that.
Just let me know when you guys are available. You can tell me what you want to talk about. Because to be very honest, I think it's time that we did things that are different and make people smile and make people happy. And
yes,
maybe we need just a better world out there. I don't know. But, Andrea, thank you so much.
Bringing a little joy does make a difference.
Yeah, it does. It makes me happy when somebody asks me to help with something or can you do this. Or, like I said, last night the little girl down the block couldn't finish her homework. She was having trouble, so I sat for an hour and helped her. And you know what? That's okay because I don't mind
that
doing that.
That makes you feel very good.
It makes me think I still remember. Yeah. I mean,
no,
I still
I
have
think
it in
it's
my
fabulous, but I mean, I also think it's very kind and wonderful. And those are the things that we can all try to do, even though we can't connect physically as much as we want to. We can be there for other people emotionally. And I try to respond to every single one of my readers' thoughts and questions because it matters.
That's right.
It makes some small difference.
It does matter a lot. So I want to thank you so much, Cheryl. We're going to push her to make the book go faster. But, you know, with the publishing companies, I mean, I had like 5 or 6 authors last week and say, why didn't you read the book? I said, it would help if it came. No, seriously.
That's really sad. That's very sad.
I felt really bad. And then finally, one of them, 2-3 books came the same day. And I go, well, which one am I going to read? Well, I review for Norm Goldman for Book Pleasures, the phenomenal site to review on. And I said, the book was 500 pages, and it took me 2 hours to read it because I couldn't put it down. The Ishmael Covenant. But if you want to know what to read, read No Stone Unturned. You just start from the beginning and read them all, really, seriously. But I want to thank you so much. Everybody have a great day. It's beautiful outside. Even if you don't take a walk, just stand outside and get some air, because the more you stay inside, I think the more you're going to feel not so great. You need to get air.
And get very panicky when you're inside. Definitely. Open the door, breathe. Be aware of nature.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
Exactly. And
thank
you
so
backyard,
much for having me. It's such
you.
A pleasure to be here always. I love talking to you. So thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you, Andrea. Anytime you want to do that show, let me know. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye.